Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 8 of Game On with Cody and John. This episode's big deal, Game On location with Hoosier Gamers. And on this episode's By Triad and I,
Red November.
Will it sink to the ocean floor, or will it tread water in your gaming library? We'll talk about it.
All this and much more on Game On with Cody and John.
Well, howdy gamers, it's Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all kinds of tabletop games, such as board games, card games, even the occasional role-playing game. How you doing today, Cody?
Pretty good. The Colts won yet another game, and Texas is in the Big 12 South champion.
Oh, you want me to stop the recording now, don't you?
I'm just sorry.
Unfortunately, no, Texas is not in the Big 12 championship because they chose to have the BCS standings be the fifth tiebreaker. This isn't a podcast about college football, but if it was, that's all I'd be talking about for the next hour.
Well, thankfully it is not, but we have some great things on tap for you, including our first interview and the big deal.
Yeah, no, this is exciting that we've been doing for the big deal segment a lot of discussions about games, but this time we actually packed all our equipment up and got on the road and went down to the Thanksgiving Charity Game Day up in Carmel, Indiana, hosted by the Hoosier Gamers. So we're going to be talking with Ken Goad from the Hoosier Gamers and have some other tidbits for you. It should be a lot of fun.
Indeed, it was nice taking the mobile recording unit out for a spin. And by mobile recording unit, I mean we throw everything we have in a bag and go record stuff.
It's a very nice bag.
It is a very nice bag. Thank you. And on this episode's By Trier and I, we have one of the newer Fantasy Flight games, Red November.
That's right. We talked last episode about cooperative games, and so we thought it would be appropriate to do a cooperative game on our next review. So we're going to be looking at a Russian submarine that is manned by half-drunken gnomes.
What else could you ask for?
You know, it's the best theme I've ever heard of in my life.
Indeed. But as always, we're going to start everything off with a Game On inbox starting now.
It's time for the Game On inbox. Here you'll find gaming news, information, discussion, as well as feedback from you, the listener. Send questions, comments, and brilliant ideas to gameoninbox@gmail.com. That's gameoninbox@gmail.com. Let's double-click on our inbox and see what we find. Welcome to the Game On inbox. We're going to start off, as always, by talking about some games we've been playing. We're going to start off with Cody. Cody, you were we just came off of the Thanksgiving holiday, and we actually were in different cities for the holiday, and Cody was up in Chicago, and why don't you tell us about your holiday?
Yeah, I was up in the Chicagoland area with my fiance's family. And immediately after that, the whole weekend, there was a basically a D&D convention, mainly for RPGA-type stuff, called Stuffed Cows. Now, Cows is a organization up there. It's the Chicagoland Order of Weekend Screwballs. And and they hosted this event that was mainly role-playing focused. But I played a ton of D&D, and it was pretty fun, aside from a few interesting DMs, but I had a blast. And
I kept getting a bunch of Facebook status updates from you from the his iPhone. I'm playing a lot of D&D right now, so it sounded like you had a good time.
I had a great time, took some pictures, got my character up in level, but definitely time for a little break. That's a lot of D&D for 3 days, but
yeah.
I'm back here and doing well. John, what did you do over the break?
Well, I spent a lot of time with my wife's family. They all came in and stayed at the house with us. And our typical Thanksgiving tradition is that I get up in the morning, I put the turkey in the oven, we watch the Thanksgiving parade on TV, and I usually will pore over the ads to see what...
Did you see the Rickroll?
I did.
That was fantastic. It was like Barry Manilow.
No, it was it started out with like some sort of puppets or something, and then it was actually Rick Astley.
Oh, wow. I actually saw a... It was like an ad for a Barry Manilow CD, and one of the songs he sang was "Never Gonna Give You Up." You know, that's what I was like, oh.
Now, for you, those listeners who aren't familiar with the concept of the Rickroll, this is something that's sort of been a phenomenon on the internet where, you know, you'll post a link to something and it'll actually link to a video of Rick Astley, 80s pop star, singing Never Gonna Give You Up. So on the Macy's Parade, they actually had a float with some song that started, and right in the middle of the song, Rick Astley walks out and starts singing Never Gonna Give You Up. It was pretty funny.
I have to see that now.
But anyway, so back to more gaming related things. after dinner, we always play some games, and so my father-in-law is actually kind of a fledgling gamer, even at the advanced age that he's at.
He's not that old.
He's like 50, I think.
Wow, but that's advanced.
But we had a chance to play a lot of different things. We played a game of the brand new edition of Formula Day, which is called Formula D.
Too cool for an E.
Too cool for an E, yeah. And it's a really beautiful reprint of this game. It's got some new mechanics to it. Well, I guess they're sort of the same mechanics, but it's got some new artwork and some new way of calculating the wear points. But
the components look cool.
They are. Yeah, they're really, really colorful. And the little cars, I think, are a lot better than the original game. And that's a game that I can play with my son, too, who is 5. And he's getting to the point where he knows how to make those basic decisions of whether to slow down or speed up. And he actually won the game that was against me and my father-in-law.
Wow.
So good for him on that. We also played a game of Sorry Sliders. We mentioned that one on the podcast quite a few times. Got in a game of Jamaica, the pirate racing game.
Always a good decision.
And I actually had something happen in Jamaica that I'd never had happen before.
What?
I won the race at the end, and I did not win the game.
Oh.
So for those of you who haven't played Jamaica, it's a racing game where you go around the island of Jamaica, and the first pirate ship to cross the line, if that's the end of the game, and that pirate ship will get 15 points. And then wherever you happen to be on the pathway, you'll get a certain number of points, and then you'll add that to the amount of gold that you have in your ship. And so I didn't have any gold in my ship, so I got 15 points for winning the race, and that was it. My father-in-law was like 3 spaces behind me. He got 7 points, and then he had, I think, 20 gold and a bunch of the bonus treasure cards, so he whipped me pretty good. I should have slowed up and gotten
you
more
cannot
gold.
Win for losing.
I can't. Like I said, I suck at games, but I love him anyway. And we also had a chance to play Dominion, which we featured last episode on our
buy. Hopefully you've bought it by now.
That's right, you should. And if you haven't, then you need to press pause and go buy it and then come back to the podcast.
And welcome back. We're glad you've enjoyed your new purchase of Dominion.
Right, so we had a good time. And one thing I just want to note about Dominion is I had a chance to play this game with my wife, who really dislikes collectible card games. She's played Magic with me once or twice. She just really isn't into it at all. But she really loved this game, and about halfway through it, she just looked at me and said, "I love this game," which is great. So, for those of you who might be a little hesitant to try Dominion because of the collectible game part, you might find that it's a surprise for you.
Indeed. Hopefully the next edition has better box art because, man, still
rough is rough.
I know. We do have some game news. We'll start of the more local variety and the latest chapter of John's Nintendo Wii saga. What do you got for us?
Yeah, well, like I said, our Thanksgiving tradition is usually to watch the parade, and then we pour through the Thanksgiving Day ads to find out where we're going to go stand in line at 5 in the morning.
You are insane. I'd rather stick a fork in my eye than go out on Black Friday.
Oh, no, it's a lot of fun. And so I was at my local Target store at 5 in the morning to rush in and get one of the last 3 copies they had of Guitar Hero World Tour for Wii for a wonderful price of $59. So good price there.
I was sleeping and it felt so good.
Oh, I felt so good carrying around that box and having people come up to me and say, "Where did you get that from?" And it's like, "Oh, you're too late."
Fork. Eye.
whatever. We have a lot of fun with that. So, been playing some Guitar Hero World Tour on the Wii. If you've never played Guitar Hero, you definitely should. It's a lot of fun. And I also in the retail frenzy of the weekend purchased a new bookshelf. You may have noticed if you've been listening to the show that I've mentioned a couple times that I need a new bookshelf to put my games on. So I got a real good deal on a 3-shelf bookshelf to put in my living room. And I built it and I filled it up with all the games that were overflowed from my current bookshelf. And it's full now.
And
too.
Now you need yet another.
Now I need a third.
You need a gaming
bookshelf.
Room, my friend.
I really do. Like you, Cody has a great gaming room in his apartment. So.
We have a closet of a walk-in closet full of games. So
yeah, unfortunately.
But you have a lot more games than I do.
I also have 2 kids. So
right. Yeah.
They tend to take up space. Yeah. But anyway, so that's been the stuff I guess I've bought recently.
And we have some news from here in the gaming capital of the world regarding Gen Con. Now, as you may or may not know, they filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy earlier this year. And there was this mysterious letter from a potential group of buyers that based out of Kentucky that wanted to make a bid to acquire Gen Con.
Yeah, they had like this real cryptic name called
creepy.
The Gen Con Acquisition Group.
I know, and apparently that has been denied by Gen Con, and they're going to continue to work with their creditors to hopefully get discharged here in early January, it looks like.
Yeah, but the president of Gen Con, I think, said that it was seemed to be an attempt at a hostile takeover to remove Peter Atkison, the owner, from Gen Con. So
weird.
Very strange.
Yeah, it was just, if you get a chance to see this letter, and we'll link to it in the show notes, it was weird. I mean, that's all I'm going to read it for yourself, but it's like, we will acquire the Gen Con and we will make it ours.
Right, right. It's like, I thought it was just a gaming convention. Not some kind of like industrial or international espionage.
You know, you don't run conventions for money.
Yeah.
And John, you have some results for the Game for Troops fundraiser that we mentioned a few episodes back.
Yeah, so we mentioned a couple of episodes ago that BoardGameNews.com and Eric Martin were doing a bit of a fundraiser to try to get some games to troops that are stationed overseas for the holidays. And he reported back on his site this past week that they were had a great amount of success and were able to raise more than $1,800. And what he decided to do as far as sending off these games is, rather than just buying a couple of copies of random games and sending those out, he's put together these kind of care packages of games. And so he's put together 10 identical packages, each which will contain the following games: Pandemic, No Thanks, Cheeky Monkey, To Court the King, Escalation, Colossal Arena,
Ink and Gold,
and the Wizard card game. And also Myriad Games in Salem, New Hampshire is going to throw in another $500 worth of games, which will make like three more packages.
Nice.
And North Star Games, the makers of Wits and Wagers and Say Anything, those great party games.
Our close personal friends at North Star Games.
At least as far as we're concerned.
That's right.
They have thrown in an entire case of Wits and Wagers.
Oh, wow.
To go to. So that's going to be a lot of great stuff. They've, you know, as, and on that list, it looks like they got a good mix of light games and some heavier games too. So I hope that the troops get those games pretty soon and can start enjoying them. So
absolutely.
Hats off again to Eric Martin for putting on that fundraiser, and we'll do even better next year.
Well done. We do have some news regarding that weird kind of viral marketing over at Fantasy Flight Games. Apparently, it is to promote their new upcoming game, Android. It looks like a murder mystery in kind of this dystopian Orwellian future society, and it looks cool.
Yeah, it looks like typical Fantasy Flight quality, meaning excellent. Also designed by Kevin Wilson,
who can do no wrong.
Who, in our book, I mean, he's designed some great ones, so including Descent and helped with Arkham Horror, those kind of things.
Fury
so.
Of Dracula.
Did he help out with that one too?
Oh, I hope so.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah, why not?
If he didn't, you'll send us some feedback at the Game On inbox, which we did get some feedback last episode.
That's right, and most of our feedback has been on our forum, which is at our guild on BoardGameGeek.com, which we'll always have a nice link to in our show notes if you want to go out and join that guild. But I kind of posed the question in the guild about our previous big deal, which is about cooperative games, just asking which ones we may have left out. We came up with a pretty good list, but I knew there was a bunch that we had left off, and you listeners kind of stepped up to the plate and gave us a nice list of some other ones that you might want to consider if you're looking for a cooperative game. These are games such as Betrayal at House on the Hill, which is actually kind of difficult to find right now. That's sort of become a pretty rare game since it's out of print. So,
oh, really?
Oh, yeah. That's
there's a comic shop near work that has a copy of it. I should go buy it.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
For like a decent price?
Yeah, I think it's the normal price.
Yeah, because I think it's going for like $100 or more on eBay right now.
There
so. And then other games like just like a massive market game, Cranium Hoopla, which I'd never heard of before.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings, of course. That was one that I totally left out. And Scotland Yard, that's kind of an older game.
I've heard
good
things about Scotland Yard.
Yeah. And one final one is one that was just released at Essen this year called Space Alert. And it was designed by Vlado Kvatl, who's the guy who designed Galaxy Trucker. And this looks like a really interesting game that... It's kind of this frantic cooperative game where you're going around this spaceship, and the game comes with a CD that has like 10-minute missions on them that and the computer voice kind of shouts at you during the game. And I haven't had an opportunity to play because it seems
really?
Like it's impossible to find in the U.S. right now. But it looks really neat.
That does sound cool.
And especially with the CD and that kind of element to it, it really seems to create some tension and some just some chaos in the game.
Well, you could even rip a CD to like an iPod or something like that, you know, so you could, it'd be a lot easier to port around.
Yeah, and I think they're even planning on coming out with some new soundtracks for new missions and that kind of stuff.
That's
so,
that's pretty cool.
So we definitely want to get our hands on this. So I was definitely a little bit jealous of Magnus Lundgren, one of our listeners, who posted, he said, we've just recently decided to run a Space Alert team tournament at our local gaming convention. He says nothing's been decided yet, but he's been discussing also sorting out all the decks so that all teams play the exact same scenario and the best team will actually win. He said it should be pretty fun, but it remains to be seen if they'll actually dare to let the teams play at the same time in the same room.
I can imagine that gets kind of loud.
Could be kind of loud, yeah. Right. But we're really looking forward to getting our hands on a copy of that game. So, hey, any of you listeners who are overseas and are able to get a copy of that in Europe and want to send us a nice Christmas gift, feel free.
Absolutely.
All right, well, I think that just about wraps it up for the Game On Inbox. We'll close that for now and head into our big deal, Game On Location with Hoosier Gamers.
Let's do it.
And now it's time for the big deal. Whether it's an interview, an in-depth review of a convention or gaming event, or a discussion on a gaming-related topic, every episode of Game On, we will do our very best to answer that eternal, burning question, what's the big deal?
Well, welcome to this episode's big deal, Game On Location with the Hoosier Gamers. On Saturday, November 22nd, John and I had the privilege of going to the Thanks for Giving Charity Game Day, hosted by an organization around here called Who's Your Gamers. And it was a great event. It was the only entry fee was a canned good or an unopened game that would be given to local charities in the area. And we had time to sit down with Ken Goad, who is on the board for Hoosier Gamers, and he told us a little bit about the group's history and their mission. And we also got to sit down and talk with some common gamers, get some man on the street interviews, and just talk games with them.
So we're really excited to bring you this content because this is the first time we've been able to get all of our equipment out into the community, and we really want to do a lot more stuff like this. Being that it is our first time, you may notice the audio quality not quite as good as here in the Game On Studios. But there's a lot of people in the background.
A lot of kids.
A lot of kids, yeah. It was a very, very good family event. But we had a great time, and I think you'll be able to hear everything just fine. So we'll have the interview with Ken Goad, and then following that, some interviews with some common gamers. So let's get right to it.
Enjoy.
Well, hi there. We're here at the Thanks for Giving Charity Game Day, sponsored by Hoosier Gamers. And we brought out all of our stuff today to be a part of this this great gaming event and to play some games. We're sort of sitting here at our table just looking around. We can see a lot of the games that are going on. I'm sure you can probably hear in the background that there's lots of folks having fun. And we're here with Ken Goad, who is on the board of directors for the Hoosier Gamers organization. And so we just wanted to talk with him a little bit about this organization. Ken, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Ken.
Always a pleasure.
Well, first to start off, just tell us about Hoosier Gamers. What's its mission? How to get started? Just give us all the juicy details there.
Hoosier Gamers is actually a charitable organization, a group of gamers that the primary mission we have is to make sure that game companies, gamers, and game stores in the area get to know each other and work together efficiently in order to help, you know, promote the genre and to expand it out in the community to help with schools, libraries, charity drives like this one that we're doing here today, and to just better get the community involved with gamers and get gamers involved with the community. So we started about a little over a year ago when we discovered that when we were meeting with other groups, there were people that would say, wow, there's a game store on the west side of Indy called Games to Die For. I didn't know they had stuff over there. And people would say, wow, I didn't know there was a game preserve on the south side either. And we just discovered that there was this gap of knowledge. People tend to stay in their biomes, as it were, of gaming groups. So we started the website to become a one-stop shop for people to learn about companies, stores, gaming events, and groups. And then it dawned on us, you know, we could do so much more with this. We could, you know, get people introduced to games, get out and run demos for people who may not want to spend $35 to learn 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons before they pick up the Player's Handbook. And we can be the ones that show them that it's worth their money, or maybe it's not the game for them. And, you know, with other things, when I learned Ink and Gold from you guys at down at KFG Wednesday Gaming. And it was just, you know, we had to go out and get it, and I've got my family hooked and many others. So the goal is, if people are going out and talking about games and learning about gaming and sharing it together as families or as groups or as friends and everything, the genre will grow. And then stores can succeed and companies can succeed. And as long as they're talking to each other about what every person wants, it allows them to better direct their energies and attitudes towards what's going to work for people and find out a little bit about what doesn't.
Okay, and the website that Ken mentioned is whosyourgamers.org, and it has a unique spelling. It's WHOSYER gamers.org. So
you get it? It's Who's Your Gamers?
Right, I got it. Okay. Thanks. And we'll link to that in the show notes, of course. So you mentioned the event today. Can you tell us a little bit about it? It's called Thanks for Giving, right? Mm-hmm.
Our goal here today was to get people to come out and just have some fun. The entrance fee, quote-unquote, to this free event is that people bring by a charitable item, either a winter clothing item, a non-perishable food item, or a piece of a new or slightly used toy. And those will be going to the local area charities. For the most part, we're primarily working with Third Phase here in Noblesville, which is an organization dedicated to helping abused women and other children of those groups find a place to stay until they can get back on their feet again. So they're, of course, missing a lot of the essentials and necessities. Some of those people have had to leave with nothing. And so what we have here is we've got a great amount of items and materials that we're going to be able to take over to them. Toothbrushes, clothes for the winter. You know, Gen Con organization has generously allowed us to give out about 1,100 wool caps that go to the kids in the area for, you know, get through the winter very nicely. So
with spreading the Gen Con name around. So
by the time they get here next summer, it'll just, you know, be completely dominated by their caps.
Now, I noticed that the table over there that has the game library, you also have quite a few, like, door prizes and items. Have you gotten some support from other game companies and stores and things like that?
Yes, we have. Game Preserve at Fashion Square Mall generously donated out two $15 gift certificates for us today.
Nice.
And we've also had some supplies and materials that have come from Q Games out of Poland, and other materials that they've sent to us and donated.
That's the company that has the really ornate dice, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay,
right.
Yeah. Those are great.
And also Games to Die For has offered up some board games and other materials. As a matter of fact, in November they're having their family game sale, which is 10% off all the board games that are on a particular wall that are more family-oriented.
Now, Hoosier Gamers has plans to do events similar to this in the future, but you also have a convention coming up in March. Is that correct?
Yes, we do. It's called HoosierCon, spelled in the same unique way. The website information for that is www.whosyercon.com, and you can find out everything there. We're accepting GM registration right now, so anybody who wants to run a game or play, you know, or, you know, either be the person that brings a board game or runs those at the con can sign up now for it. It's going to be at the Hilton Indianapolis North, which is over on 82nd and at the intersection of 69 and 465. They've generously allowed us to use 4,300 square feet of gaming space there, and it'll be over 3 days, March 13th through the 15th of 2009. Anytime you can start gaming on Friday the 13th and end on the Ides of March, it's got to be a good event. What could go wrong?
And it is completely free, is that correct?
It's a completely free event for people to stop by. You don't have to bring anything with you. Just come on by and have a great time with the gaming. If you want to stay and game all night with us and have a good time with that, the hotel has provided us low-priced rooms at $89 a night for the event while we're there. So,
very nice. And now, in addition to this charity game day, there are also plans to do, on a smaller scale than HoosierCon, other charity game days and events like this. Is this correct?
Yeah, we hope to have essentially two charitable game day events during the year and one charitable game weekend, which was HoosierCon. So of the two game day events we have Thanks for Giving, which is today's event that normally happens before the holiday season. And we're also going to have Ready for School, which is an event that will occur just prior to the school starting in the Indianapolis area, where we will have the same type of event, free gaming for people to come by. The only item that we ask that you bring is something that can be used for kids to go back to school with, either clothing, school supplies, or other materials that people can use on, you know, hygiene items and things like that for people that may, you know, have to be transitioned areas in order to take their kids to school.
Well, that's great. Well, this really glad that this organization is here, especially as local gamers ourselves. And Cody and I will definitely be at HoosierCon, probably running some games, and I think we're going to even set up and do an episode of the podcast from there as well. So for those who might be listening that aren't in the Indianapolis area or in the Midwest, because we have listeners that are come from really all over the world, what advice would you give for folks who might be interested in starting up an organization like this? Because it sounds like this is something that has a potential for being successful all over the country and maybe over the world.
I will say, from an advice point of view, it's fairly easy to get started if you have the passion for gaming. The ability for us to do what we basically do, which, and we also put out the invite for anyone out there who wants to demo games, is to get out in the stores and demo your favorite games to those people who may not necessarily know about them. Because when they find out about the game from you playing it, they're either going to pick up on your passion or what the game's about, and it's a great free way to get them involved in the hobby. And when you start with those kind of things, you'll also find that a number of game companies and stores have all kinds of programs that are available to help expand the market. Funnigan Games, one of the people that do the Ink and Gold game that we had discussed before, has a program right now for $100 of a grant of their gaming supplies to any company that, you know, 501c organization or gaming organization that sends in and can tell them what they're going to do with the games and how they're going to help further the hobby. They're willing to give you $100 worth of their games to go out and start your game library and begin with things with. And that also applies to things like Atlas Games and other companies out there that have these programs around that if you just dig a little bit, you can find out about them. So it's easy to get started and easy to maintain. And, you know, anytime you can expand the passion of gaming to other people, you know, and help build family unity and friend unity and everything about it, what gaming's really supposed to be about, you've done a good thing.
It seems like this is the gaming is the kind of hobby that has this sort of, I guess, viral marketing aspect to it. Unlike other things, I mean, you don't really need to contact a golf company or any kind of sports fan company to have them give you products to be able to spread the love of that particular hobby. But in gaming, it seems like it's a much more tight-knit group of people who are really interested in sharing. I'd almost use the word evangelism of people who are trying to spread the word about gaming. Is that kind of what you found?
Yeah, and it's very close exactly to what you're talking about. The great thing is that even in economic times like this, you can still come out to events like this, and this is what we want to offer, is the opportunity for events that are free, events that are relatively low cost, so that people have the opportunity to get into the hobby without necessarily having to expend a lot to find out they don't like it. One of the main disadvantages of like bigger cons or other areas like that is that you might have to spend $35 at the door to get in to find out this isn't for me. Whereas if you can do things like this and show people and help guide them and, you know, give them the expense, I mean, we can pretty much game for about a year and a half on all the things that we have here and never have to buy anything else. So why shouldn't others be able to come in and see what we do and enjoy the gaming the way we do and help expand it and grow it? And then when they grow, they bring their stuff and essentially, you know, you have the army that we talked about of being able to help support, and then companies get the benefit from that, and the economy picks back up again.
Well, for the first charity game day, there's a really good turnout for this, I think, and I think it's only going to go up from here.
And we have some more coming in now, and some more clothing and other things. And like I said, I think as we grow and get more people out there and people begin to find out what our mission actually is, that it's not just about being a gaming clique, that it's also about people helping other people and growing with that, that we really hope to expand into other areas. We have groups in Ohio and people that are from the Ohio area that help us. We have people right now from Kentucky that are, of course, helping and expanding with us as well, and Illinois. So eventually we hope, you know, to have a sort of Midwest coalition of this. And then, like you said, anybody else that's out there listening that wants to help and get involved or demo games or just wants to be part of this or find out how we do it, come on by the website and ask the questions, or come on out to the con in March. We'd be glad to talk to you more.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us before we let you get back to your game?
Well, we just want to thank you guys again for the opportunity to be able to promote this, and we really enjoy what you guys are doing as well by doing the games and talking to people about them and getting people to know them. You're helping people guide them in the right direction, same similar sorts of message. But really, it's just we just want people to come on out, game with us, see what we're about, and decide whether or not it's something you want to help out even more with.
Very good. Well, we'd like to thank Ken Goad. He is a board member for Hoosier Gamers, and we'll have the link to the organization and the convention on the website. And we're going to go play some Battlestar Galactica now.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ken.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
So we're here at the Thanks for Giving Charity Game Day here in beautiful Carmel, Indiana, with the Hoosier Gamers. And so we thought we would just grab some folks and bring them in and talk to them, because we do tell you listeners that we are striving to be the uncommon podcast for the common gamer. And so we found a whole bunch of common gamers, just great folks. And so we're here right now with one of those folks. And so if you could just tell us your name and...
My name is Matthew Swetnam.
Hello, Matthew. we actually are friends with Matt. We've known Matt for quite a while, but we wanted to get him on the microphone. And we just wanted to ask you... Well, Cody, you were going to be asking questions, right?
Well, yes, I was.
Sorry, I didn't.
It's okay.
I got to stick to the script.
It's okay. So, how'd you get into gaming in the first place? What brought you to this godforsaken hobby?
Well, you know, I was actually drawn in by a friend of mine. I've always enjoyed playing games. I didn't really put a name to what it was. And then when my wife and I moved back to Indiana from Colorado, and we actually had friends again, he started me out. He pulled me into to D&D, which I'd played before, but more casually, and really just sort of took off from there. He took me to Gen Con, and I started meeting more people that actually enjoyed the same games, and found out that it wasn't odd that I liked the games that I liked. It was... There were more people that I could kind of hang out with and play the same games, and it's just kind of taken off from there.
Awesome. What have you played today so far?
Earlier I played a game of Munchkin Cthulhu.
Oh, nice. Did you win?
No, I got tramped.
You got trampled?
Trampled terribly. It was really kind of tragic how badly I lost.
Now, are you planning on playing or running anything this afternoon? I hear that you're quite good at the one particular game that I've played before.
Yeah, I've been commissioned to play a game of Kobolds Ate My Baby.
All hail King Torg.
all hail King Torg.
So yeah, I'll be running that kind of spur of the moment. I don't have anything prepared, but...
That's the best way to run that game.
Yeah,
though,
yeah. You know, it's beer and pretzels. I'm going with Mountain Dew and probably
common
fruit
elixir
snacks.
Of choice for gamers, right?
Yep. All right. Well, thanks for coming and stopping by, and we'll let you get back
to
the gaming.
Thank you.
Okay, we've culled another victim from the masses here, and we've pulled another gamer in. Can you tell us your name?
My name's Jennifer.
Okay, and how'd you get in the gaming, Jennifer?
I had heard about this thing called Gen Con for several years, and once I moved to Indianapolis, where I'd go, never made it. And so about 2 years ago, got involved with a company, decided to volunteer, felt like camp for a week, decided I wasn't going to come back. Wasn't going to miss another year.
Awesome.
So since then, it's been nothing but gaming.
Very cool. What have you played today, and what do you plan on playing, I guess?
Today I played Munchkin Cthulhu with John here.
Yep.
And
I lost.
Yeah. He cheated. He had six little Cthulhus in front just off the bat.
Yeah, well, I got to mention that for a second here. Jen had a house rule where if you had, for every Cthulhu that you had in your possession, you get a +2 bonus. And I happen to have the game Unspeakable Words with me, which comes with a whole pile of little plastic Cthulhus. But I didn't know the house rule, so I would just bring... I brought three of them over as just kind of a good luck charm, and I had no ideas. I could have brought, like, 20 of them. I think that would have guaranteed me victory, but anyway.
So, I played Incan Gold.
Woo!
Woo! and had all my treasure lost very fast. And didn't find any treasures there, but I had a great time playing that game. And I'm hoping that someone will be putting on a nice little 2 or 3 hour game of The Kobolds Ate My Baby.
Fantastic.
All hail King Torg.
All hail King Torg, yeah.
All hail King Torg.
Yeah, we just talked to Matt not too long ago. All right, we'll let you get back to gaming, and thanks for stopping by, Jennifer.
Bye.
All right, we've got another pitcher here from the bullpen. We have actually a worldwide Wing Knight veteran. What's your name?
I am Paul Johnson.
He is Paul Johnson. Paul, tell us how you got into gaming.
Well, long, long ago when I was just a small child, someone brought out a deck of cards that was called Magic.
Ah, I know this story very well.
Yeah, so I started playing, and then I got into some role-playing, and then I got into the fun, fun world of many, many board games that are... expensive if you get a lot of them.
That's right. Yeah, that is very similar to mine. Magic is a very good gateway drug for other games in the hobby. What all have you played today?
Today I have lost at Munchkin.
All right.
No, wait. I won it tying.
You won it tying? Very good. A tie is a win.
And then I played some Ticket to Ride, where I lost.
Fantastic. What else are you going to play today?
Well, I have no idea. There's still time, and my game of Ticket to Ride just ended, and I got grabbed to come over here before I could figure out what I was going to play next.
Awesome. We are doing Battlestar Galactica probably after
I heard
after
your
this.
Review on that on episode what, 4?
Episode 1.
Oh. Yeah. Never mind then.
I forget what episodes there are.
On whatever episode it was. It sounds like a fun game.
Absolutely. Well, we'll have to get you in. Paul, thanks for stopping by. And
it was a pleasure.
We'll get you in for some BSG here soon.
Oh, good.
Buy, try, or deny. Every episode of Game On, we review a game and offer our opinions to help you decide whether a game is worth spending your hard-earned money on. If we say that a game is a buy, we definitely recommend that you go to your local gaming store or online retailer and purchase it immediately. If we say the game is a try, we think it's a good game and definitely worth playing, but the game may or may not appeal to a certain audience. Or it has one or two flaws that may keep you from enjoying it fully. If we deny a game, there is definitely something seriously wrong with the game, and we recommend that you let it continue to collect dust on your game store's shelf. So let's get started. Welcome to Buy, Try, or Deny. This episode we're going to be talking about Red November. This is a cooperative board game from Fantasy Flight Games. And once again, we make the disclaimer that we are not the Fantasy Flight Games fanboy podcast, despite all evidence to the contrary. But this game was released just a couple of months ago here in 2008. It's designed by Bruno Fiduti and Jeff Gontier. It is for 3 to 8 players, but it is also playable with 2, which is the way that Cody and I played it, was with 2. And it retails for about $25. In Red November, you and your fellow players are going to take on the role of gnome sailors. That's G-N-O-M-E, sailors. Frantically running around a damaged Russian submarine, you're trying to put out fires and stop flooding while trying to keep the engine and the life support systems working, all the while attempting to avoid a nuclear missile launch and not get destroyed by a giant kraken outside the ship.
Another day at the office.
And if the gnomes can survive for only 1 hour, then they will be rescued and you'll win the game. But time is definitely not on your side. So we'll start off by going over the components of this wacky little game, and then we'll go into the game turn. So with the game, you're going to get a silver line sized box. This is in their silver line of games, which includes things like Citadels, Cold War, KGB versus CIA, and Condottiere, among others. And so it's a real tiny little box that you're going to be getting all your stuff in. But there is just an absolute ton of components in this game. So many so that they probably could have made this into a big box board game, much like World of Warcraft, the adventure game, Battlestar Galactica, something like that.
Definitely. It barely fits in the box provided.
Yeah, and if you're a fan of bagging your components like I am, then it really doesn't, the box won't close all the way once you put everything in there. So that's a good thing and a bad thing at the same time. So you're going to get a board, which is going to have a picture of the Red November Submarine on it, and you want to be real careful when you put the board on the table, and Cody's laughing because he knows what I'm about to say. When I got my board, I was noticing it wasn't really laying flat on the table, and so I tried to bend it back a little bit. You know, you can sort of bend against the seam and to make it lay a little flatter. Well, after applying very little pressure on the board, it snapped into two pieces in my hands. And I'm sure I had a look of astonishment and bewilderment on my face.
Red November, the modular board game.
It became a modular board pretty quickly. But thanks to the wonderful folks at Fantasy Flight Games customer service, including the lovely and talented Thad Powell, I was able to get a new copy of the board. So if you get this game, either because of or in spite of our review, be real careful with the board. You're also going to get some miniatures to represent your gnomes. These are little plastic miniatures in 8 different colors. You're going to get some gnome cards, one for each player. This is mainly to indicate sobriety. And sobriety sort of is an important part of this game. As you're playing, you're going to be drinking some grog, possibly to give yourself some extra strength and make yourself just a little bit drunker. You're going to get some time counters. These are little plastic counters that are stackable, and that's going to help to drive the time mechanic in the game, which we'll talk about in a second, one of the neater mechanics in the game. You're going to get a bunch of item tokens. These are little square cardboard chits. They're actually already pre-punched, so at least I think they were pre-punched. Yeah, I can't remember at this point, but I think they were pre-punched.
I wasn't there when you bought it.
Yeah, I know.
You didn't call me right away. That's inexcusable.
Good research, John. I think that they're pre-punched. And then you're also going to get some disaster tokens, some event cards, a whole deck of little event cards. For those of you who have played Ticket to Ride, the original cards for that, it's about the same size as those cards, maybe even a little bit smaller, but they fit in the box there. So those event cards, you're going to get some cubes to mark the 3 tracks on the board that represent your oxygen levels and your the heat track, and we'll get into that in a second. And you're also going to get 1 10-sided die. And that's what you're going to get. And that's a ton of stuff. And
right, for such a little box.
Really, it just barely fits in the box. So we'll just go ahead and get into a game turn here in a second. First of all, I'm going to start off by talking about the time system in the game, which I think is probably the most unique mechanic in the game. So unlike other board games where one player takes a turn and then it goes around to the table to the next player and then to the next player, everything that you do in this game is going to take a certain amount of time. And so around the outside of the board is a track, and this is your time track. You're going to start off, depending on how many players you play with in the game, at certain places along this track. And then as you take an action in the game, these actions are going to take a certain amount of time. And so in addition to your player's time marker, there's also a white marker called the ghost time counter. Not sure why it's called the ghost time counter, but it basically is a placeholder for you to be able to move this counter ahead to indicate how much time you're spending on your turn. And you'll spend this time and you'll take all your actions, that kind of a thing. And then at the end of your turn, your actual token will move forward on the time track to meet up with the ghost time track. And the reason why you do that is because at the end of your turn, depending on how much time you've spent working on different tasks, you might hit certain points on the time track where you'll have to draw event cards. There's little star markers on the board, and every time you hit one of those, you have to draw an event card. And the event cards are all the bad things that happen in the game. Like in last episode we mentioned, in all these cooperative games, there's some sort of bad mechanic where the game is playing you. The event deck
The game is not your friend.
The game is definitely not your friend. So that's kind of how the time mechanic works in the game. And the way it's going to work as far as whose turn it is whoever is the farthest back on the track is always going to be the player who goes next. So even if it's your turn and you've already gone a certain number of spaces, if you're still in last place, then you get to go again until you're no longer the last place player. So the last place player is always the person who goes next. So that's kind of a neat mechanic. It's a little bit different from other games. For those of you who have ever played the game Thebes or Jenseits von Theben, this mechanic for time is used very similarly in that game. As a matter of fact, the designers of the game specifically thank Peter Prince, the designer of Thebes, for his contribution to the game, and so I'm pretty sure that that probably has to do with this time mechanic. So on your game turn, you're going to have your gnome on one of the areas of the ship. There's 10 rooms in the Red November submarine, and then the space that's around the ship is considered another area too, because you can actually leave the ship at certain points. And so you're going to start off in a particular room that you'll randomly select by rolling a die. And on your turn, you're going to be moving around and trying to fix things on the ship. Now, the ship starts off in pretty good shape, but as you move around and as you move that ghost time track, these event cards will start to cause havoc on the ship, and the gnomes will have a lot more stuff to do to frantically run around and try to fix. So you're going to start off with a movement step on your turn. And most of the time, that's going to require the first thing you're going to have to do is open a door. Because these hatches that are on the ship, you have to open those up, and it takes 1 minute to open a hatch, provided that the hatch is not blocked. And we'll go into blocked hatches and things like that in a second. So opening up the door takes 1 minute, and then, provided that it's not flooded, you can move into the room that you just opened the door to for free. And so you can do this as many times as you want, opening doors and moving and that sort of a thing. Again, it's going to take a certain number of minutes to do those things. And then once you're in a room and you want to take an action, then you can do that. And the actions are almost always going to be fixing something. And so if you happen to be in the forward engine room, you could fix the engine. If you're in a room that's flooded, you can pump the water out and fix the flooding. If you're in a room that's on fire, you can put the fire out, all these kinds of things. And so the decisions that you make during the game are going to kind of be dictated by whatever is the worst crisis that's going on at a particular time. For those of you who have played other kinds of cooperative games, Pandemic's the one that comes to mind, is that if you see a particular kind of disease that's building up, you want to go and take care of that one first. It's the same thing with this game. If you see that a particular area of the ship is getting very flooded, or if the oxygen track is getting to a critical level, then you might want to focus your attention on fixing that. Okay, so on the action step of your turn, you're going to decide what you want to fix on the ship. So, for example, let's say that you're in room number one, which is the engine room, and you want to repair the engines. Now, the engines are going to get gradually worse and worse as time goes on and as you draw more of these event cards. So there's a track on the board with a little cube that indicates kind of how bad the engines are, how close they are to being completely obliterated. And so let's say that you want to fix the engine so that that track goes down. There's two places on the track, these two stars, one at the very beginning of the track and one at the middle. If your cube is in between the first two stars, then if you fix it, then it goes back down to the very beginning of the track. If you're past that second star, which means you're in the second half of that track, if you fix it, then you successfully fix the engine, then it goes back down to that middle star. So it would require two fixes in a row to be able to get it back down to zero. So kind of see how that works. So those three tracks all work the same way. There's a heat track, an oxygen track, and then a like an engine track. And so let's say that you want to fix the engine as your action. What you're going to do, and this is true for any of these fix-it actions, you're going to decide how many minutes you want to spend trying to fix whatever exactly that you're trying to fix. And you can choose between 1 and 10 minutes to work on something. So let's say that in the engine room there, we want to spend 4 minutes working on the engine. And then you can, if you want to, add any item tokens that you might have. You're going to start off the game with, everybody's going to start off with two of these item tokens. And there's a couple of rooms in the submarine where you can go and get more item tokens. But each of these item tokens will give you a particular kind of bonus to a particular kind of fix-it action. So you might have, for example, an engine manual, which will give you a +4 bonus to the fix engine action. Or you might have a fire extinguisher, which would give you a +3 bonus to extinguishing a fire. So all these item tokens are just going to give you specific bonuses. So let's say that you did have the engine manual, which will give you a +4 bonus to fixing the engine. You're going to spend 4 minutes working on it. So that's a 4, plus your +4 for having the engine manual. That gives you a total of 8. So now you're going to roll the 10-sided die. And what you have to do is you have to roll equal to or less than the value of time and items that you've that you've accumulated. So in this case, you would have to roll an 8 or less to be successful at fixing the engine. So if you are successful, then you're going to move that track down appropriately. Or in the case of a fire, you're going to remove the fire token. In the case of a flood, you're going to remove the flood token. Things like that. You're going to make the situation better. If you don't fix a particular situation, so if we had rolled a 9 or a 10 in that case, the engine would not be fixed. And in most cases, just having it not fixed is bad enough, because probably later in your turn, it's going to get even worse. In situations like fire or flood, things could get kind of dicey, because if you're in a room with high water and you try to use an action to pump the water out and you're unsuccessful, then your gnome is going to have to escape from that room, or else he's going to die the next turn because he will drown. So there's some sort of dire consequences. There's a lot of very specific rules in this game. One thing I'll just go ahead and mention now is I thought the rule book was not particularly well organized. It was kind of difficult for me when I was going through like a test game of this to get all of the rules down. But there is a couple of action summary cards with all the items on it. Those were kind of helpful. So anyway, to continue, you're going to be taking your movement. You're going to perform an action, which will be fixing something. And then your third step is to do what's called a feint check. Now, on the ship, there are going to be all these items that will help you to fix stuff. But there is one item on the ship that can help you fix just anything. And that's a bottle of grog. Cause,
always the answer to life's problems.
Yeah, because if you take a little bit of booze and slug it down there, that's going to give you extra confidence and extra abilities that will allow you to do things better, right? That's what happens when you drink alcohol, right?
Game On with Cody and John does not condone the use of alcohol for social problems.
Absolutely. But in the case of Red November, it seems to
drink.
Help. Drink up. So if you happen to have a grog item token, that token will give you a +3 bonus to any particular fix-it action that you want to do. So you can spend that item token on your action. You'll get a +3. But what you're going to do is take your gnome card that comes with your miniature, and you're going to turn that over. And that card has got 4 sections on it to indicate how drunk you are. So you're going to turn that one to the level 1 level of intoxication. If you later on in the game do take another grog, then you're going to turn to the 2, 3, 4, etc. And I think eventually once you get past 4, I think your gnome dies. But that's going to give you a little bit of an extra boost in your action phase. But if you do happen to use the grog to give yourself that +3 bonus, then you have to do what's called a feint check to see if you actually pass out from the booze that you just drank. So the event card deck. These event cards are going to have some text on them that tell you the bad things that happen. We'll go over that in a second in the event section. But at the bottom right of every card, there is a number. And so what you're going to do when you perform a feint check is you're going to turn over that top card on the event deck and look at the number. And then you're going to compare that number to the level of intoxication that you are. And as long as your level of intoxication is less than the number on the card, then you remain upright. Otherwise, you're going to faint. You'll lay your miniature on the side, and they assume that you're going to be passed out for 10 minutes. So in addition to whatever time you spent on your turn, you have to add another 10 minutes on the time track. Now that seems great, right? Because when you get to the end of that 1 hour of time, you get rescued. Well, the problem is that if you move that far ahead, a whole lot of other bad things are going to happen, and it's going to be so long before it gets around to your turn again. It's pretty likely that your gnome's going to die. They even say that in the rule book, that if you pass out, there's a high likelihood that your gnome is going to die.
They're right.
And if your gnome dies, then you're unfortunately out of the game. So after the feint check step, whether you pass it or not, you're going to move on to the updates phase. And this is where your actual time token is going to move along the track to meet up with the ghost time tracker that you've been using to mark your time. As you move along this track, whenever you get to a place with a star, you're going to turn over an event card and do what the event says. Now, if you're lucky, you'll get a card that says respite, which means that nothing happens at all. But more often than not, you're going to get a card that says something like a fire breaks out in a random room. Or the flooding happens in a random room. Whenever something says a random room, you're going to roll that 10-sided die. Whatever number comes up, you're going to put the token into that room. It might be something that will increase the asphyxiation track, that oxygen track, or increase the heat track. Just bad stuff that's going to happen all around on the ship. There also are some cards in there that are these mega disaster cards. And so these really bad disaster event cards are things like missile countdown, where, you know, the missiles are going to launch and blow your submarine up. And so this is called a timed event, and it says on the card, timed event, place the missile countdown destruction token at plus 10. So these are your disaster or destruction tokens that you're going to place. They look like little hourglasses. And you're going to take that, and wherever your time counter is, you're going to take that and add 10 minutes to it, and then put this disaster token down. And what that basically is, it's like a timer of doom, if you will, as to when you're going to lose the game. And so what you have to do is, for example, in the missile countdown, you have to go into the missile launch room and perform a successful repair action in order to stop that disaster from happening. And so everybody in the game, all the players, have an opportunity to try to do that. But once their time marker passes the time where that disaster token is placed, or that destruction token, they can no longer perform any kind of a fix-it action there. So it sort of just sets a bit of a brick wall where everybody has to then try to successfully fix that part of the ship before everybody passes it. It even is the case where if you happen to pass over that destruction token as you're making your check, then it automatically fails. So these are the really, really bad cards in the game that you want to be real careful of. So if you're the player that's in last place, it's really bad to get one of these destruction tokens, because it's possible that all of the other players have already passed where the destruction token is placed, leaving a very little opportunity to repair the ship. So that's kind of how it's going to work. After the time counter meets up with that ghost time counter, you're going to move that ghost time counter back to the player who's in last place, and then they will start to make their actions. So the ebb and flow of the game is really quite interesting and different from other cooperative games that I've played. So the goal is to get all of your gnomes to pass 60 minutes of time and still have all of the parts of the ship be intact. Like most cooperative games, there's like one way to win and about 15 ways to lose. And so if this destruction token, if all the players pass the destruction token, then the ship blows up or is destroyed and the players lose. If any of these tracks get all the way to the end, then the players lose. If all the gnomes die, then the players lose. So there's lots of ways that you can lose this game as well. There's even a couple of other little mechanics that I won't go too deeply into that... after you've gone through the event deck once, you're going to insert this Kraken card. And there's a picture on the board of this giant octopus squid thing outside of the ship. And you can even, and that's a destruction event as well, where the Kraken's going to destroy your submarine. And so if you get the proper equipment, one of your gnomes can actually leave the ship and go swim out there and try to shoot down the Kraken and kill him. So there's lots of variety in the game. There's even a mechanic where if you get close enough to the end, you can actually abandon the ship and leave all the other gnomes there to die, and it stops becoming a cooperative game, and then it's one player kind of playing against all the rest of them. So there's a lot of detail and a lot of stuff going on for a game that is in such a small box. So that is kind of the basic flavor of the game. I probably haven't done as good of a job as I have in previous episodes of going over the specifics of the rules, but I think you kind of get the idea of how the game works. And so that is Red November from Fantasy Flight Games. And we're at that magic moment. Cody, are you awake?
I'm awake. I'm here.
All right. Good job. Cody, Red November, buy, try, or deny?
It's going to be a try for me.
Okay.
And that's it. Thank you. No, we played it and it was fun. It had some good mechanics, but I really liked the theme. I just wanted to see a little more with it. I'd almost like to see if this wasn't a Silver Line game, if this maybe the rules were a little more complex and they blew it up into a kind of a bigger 1 or 2 hour game, what they could do with it. I think it could be interesting. I just think that, especially with a lot of people, someone could get eliminated pretty quickly, and then they're just kind of sitting there. You know, I don't know. I just, there are better cooperative games mm-hmm. out there, and this one, the theme and the and the time track being a unique mechanic, I think that's enough to maybe check it out. But for me, it's just a try. So we will go to you, John W. Richard. Buy, try, or deny.
Cody, this one's going to be a buy.
What?
This one is a buy for
me. I've been bamboozled.
You have. We sat down and played this game, and we were both firmly in try category, but I've given it some thought.
Happened?
And I've taken a, you know,
you're
a look
getting paid.
I am not getting
Fantasy
paid.
Fantasy Flight's cutting you a check.
No, I was so enamored by the new board. No, I really think that this game, for what you pay for it, has so much good quality to it that it's worth buying. I will agree with you. It is not the best cooperative game that I've played. I could list two or three, I think, that are better than this.
I could list four or five.
Name that game. No. But I really think that for the $25 price point there, there's so much detail, so much depth to the game. I think it is a lot of fun. I love the time mechanic. And I think with a pretty robust, fun group of cooperative game lovers, I think this could be just an absolute blast. And so I have to give this one a buy. I think it probably just has more to do with just the value of what you get for your money. And it's also just, a really well-designed game.
That's fair. That's fair. Okay. Oh, I won't rag on you too much.
Well, good, because you're wrong.
Whoa. So,
hey, it's time for me to pick on you
Look
a little bit.
You.
I think you made a bad decision there. So anyway, so that's Red November. Cody gave it a
try,
unfortunately. And John gave it a buy, which is the right answer.
You're such a sheep.
Whatever.
Nah. All right, well, that wraps up another episode of Game On with Cody and John. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you want to check us out on the web, you can do so at gameonpodcast.com. There we've got show notes, past episodes, and we have a donation button. If you want to throw a few bucks our way, we will use that toward buying new equipment and new games to better serve you, the common gamer.
That's right, and we, as always, guarantee that 100% of any funds sent to us will be put back towards the podcast to bring you the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer.
Absolutely. And from that webpage, you can also check out our Board Game Geek Guild. We're guild number 576, and on the guild, you'll see pictures from forum users, as well as discussions that many of the listeners have gotten into, have suggested games for us, other things. We'd like for you to check it out.
We're up to 66 members in the guild as of the recording of this show, but we also know that there's a lot more of you that listen than 66.
Oh, definitely.
We're tracking all of that.
We have gnomes in the back doing that.
So for those of you that either aren't familiar with Board Game Geek or just haven't had a chance to join the guild yet, we'd encourage you to come out and just check it out and post a thread, post some information. We've got a very nice listener who posted some information about the Fantasy Flight Games holiday sale that's going on right now. So we really appreciate all of your feedback. You know, another way that you can get in touch with us, if you have any questions, comments, or as we said, brilliant ideas, feel free to email us at the Game On Inbox.
That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
That's right. So we really appreciate you listening, and join us in 2 weeks for episode 9, where we're going to be bringing you a very special Game On.
That's right. Just in time for the holidays, we're going to reconcile with our most hated games, as I will bravely and boldly play Carcassonne again for the first time in quite a while. And John?
And I will bravely pull out Settlers of Catan and play that. I haven't really mentioned much on the show how much I dislike Settlers. Definitely not as much as Cody has mentioned his hated Carcassonne.
It is a crap game.
But we're going to do some reviews of those games and, you know, try to give those games a second chance, you know, for the holidays.
Of course. And we'll talk about that on our next episode of Very Special Game On.
Until then, enjoy the start of your holiday season and
Game On! And this episode's by Try or Deny.
Red November.
Will it?
We're not doing it. Red November.
Yeehaw!
It's a hootenanny.
Hoo-hoo!
Let's do that again.
Hi there.